Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. This podcast can definitely help your English a lot, especially your listening skills, but it will work best if you're also working on other areas like speaking skills. And you can do that by having conversations on iTalki, the sponsor of this episode. To get started with iTalki, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk and check out a lot of the English teachers and native speakers available there. They are ready and waiting to speak to you, to listen to you, and to help you learn English. And another cool thing is that because you're a Lepster, because you listen to this podcast, iTalki will give you a voucher for a free lesson when you buy some talking time. To get that offer, visit teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my site. Any questions that you have, just feel free to contact me via my website. Okay, so here is a new episode. Let's start the jingle now. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everybody. Here is the second part of my conversation with my friend Moz that was recorded a few weeks ago. After talking about murder in the last episode, Moz and I kept talking for about another 45 minutes, just rambling on and going off on a few tangents, and you can listen to that conversation in this episode as part of your ongoing mission to improve your English by listening to real conversations that actually happened between actual people who actually said some actual things and actually recorded them and uploaded them for you to actually listen to. So here are some of the things that we actually talked about, and I've written these in the form of some questions. So here are some of the things that we talked about. What goes into making and publishing a podcast? Who is my audience and where are they? That's you, by the way. Who are you and where are you? What's it like to meet members of my audience? What's the difference between doing audio podcasts and making videos for YouTube? Should native speakers adapt their speech when talking to non-native speakers of English? Does the word cack in English relate to similar words in other languages? What does the word cack actually mean? It means poo, by the way. Yep. How much of our personal information should we be sharing online? How much of my personal information should I be sharing in episodes of this podcast? Should you post pictures of your children on social media? What are the effects of social media and artificial intelligence on our lives? And how might this change in the future? How could you fight against a robot invasion using an umbrella and software updates? And how much do we hate mosquitoes? And what happens when you kill them? And how can you identify different drug addicts that you might meet on the streets of London just based on how they smell? So I think they all sound like perfectly good questions for discussion, don't you? I can even imagine some of those questions cropping up in the speaking section of a Cambridge English exam. Some of them, maybe not the one about CAC or the one about drug addicts, but who knows? So anyway, you can listen on to find out how we talk about all of those things. If you're a vocabulary hunter, check out the page for this episode on my website, because there you will find a list of words and phrases that come up in this conversation. That list is available in order to help you to use this episode to expand your vocabulary and to develop a more natural form of English. There is a bit of rude language and some slightly graphic content in this conversation, just letting you know. But now it's time for you to actually hear the rest of my actual chat with the actual Moz. And here we go.
English.
Mr. Luke,
yes.
Can I ask you questions about podcasting?
Yes, of course.
As you are the king of podcasting.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing it now?
I've been doing it for nearly 8.5 years.
That was before podcasting was invented.
Was it? I don't think it was.
I think you invented podcasting.
I think podcasting really first started, as far as I remember, in around 2006. Do you remember the Ricky Gervais podcast?
Oh, yes.
Did you used to listen to that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Him and Carl Pilkington and Stephen Merchant, they were probably one of the first podcasts that was really famous. And I think that was 2005, 2006?
Wow.
Something like that.
Blimey.
So that was the first real wave of podcasting. And then it kind of went away again. And then it came back big time in around 2014. Maybe a little earlier than that too, but 2014, I think, is when Serial arrived.
I love Serial.
Yeah, that was a huge hit with people who didn't normally listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
That was a true crime podcast that came from the United States. And so that was a huge hit. But 2009 was kind of, yeah, pretty early, I would say. There are loads of podcasts now that have come out in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
But, yeah, I've been doing this one since Easter 2009. Yeah.
Wow. Mm. And have you given yourself a rest or do you just keep going?
There were some periods in the first couple of years where I kind of just, I just would leave it for ages. I remember there was maybe something like 3 months at one point.
What?
Where I didn't do anything. Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. And like back in the early days, I think there was a period at some point before the first 100 episodes had been done, I would at one point I was just like, I had ideas and stuff, but I just for some reason couldn't quite find the motivation to get up, switch on the microphone and start talking. And I'd be sitting there, you know, like reading a book or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, I should do a podcast. And then I'd just look at the microphone. I'd be like, nope, it's not happening. I don't know why it's not going to happen today. And that lasted 3 months. And then it came back. These days, I think I'm a lot more sort of devoted to it than I used to be. I mean, like in the early days, my audience has grown, you know, a lot.
Yes.
over that 8-year period. And in the early days when I didn't have so many people listening, it wasn't such a big deal for me. And so I didn't always feel obliged to do it. And, you know, it's when the inspiration struck me. These days I try to be a bit more sort of organized and rigorous about it so that I can make sure I put stuff up on a regular basis. Yeah, but no, generally I haven't taken a proper break, not an official break, no.
You're getting good numbers as well.
Yeah, pretty good numbers. I mean, not as good as I would get on YouTube these days. I mean, to be honest, it's all about YouTube, really. I mean, there are some English teachers on YouTube who are getting phenomenal views. For example, someone like English with Lucy, who is this sort of attractive young English girl. Yeah. She's very appealing. She's very appealing on the videos. And she's very good, you know, and she seems to be giving people exactly what they want on YouTube. And so she's getting, you know, like hundreds of thousands of views on her videos. And there are also, you know, various sort of young, hip, fresh-faced YouTubers doing English lessons, and they're doing very well. So, I mean, I'm sticking with podcasting because it works for me, and I like the fact that with audio, I could be a lot more productive with audio than I can with video. With video, it's just there are so many other factors that make it difficult. I mean, I have to say that I'm very impressed by a lot of the young. Listen to me talking about young people. Does this mean I'm getting? Yeah, I suppose I'm sort of young. It's all about perspective, isn't it? Ish. Yeah. Anyway. new, I should say. You know, I'm impressed by the new YouTubers who managed to produce really good-looking content. I mean, the video quality is great, and you know they're doing some really good stuff. But
I guess it's technology, isn't it? Because technology has moved on so fast that we can do all this ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to do good YouTube videos, you need a decent digital SLR camera with a you know some sort of a boom microphone attached to it, and some and a nice space like a nice location for doing your videos and the right kind of lighting, and then some editing software and loads of time, and those are the ingredients basically. And obviously you need a good person, you need the presentation skills, and you need to look good on video and that kind of thing, and those generally the ingredients for making a hit YouTube channel, especially for learning English.
Yeah.
But I find audio is still the thing that I come back to, because it's a lot. I can be much faster on an audio. I don't have to worry about the large file sizes of video, yeah, which are a real pain to edit and to process. It just takes ages. With audio, I can edit. I can process the audio files really quite quickly. I don't have to worry about what I look like when I'm recording. You know, I can just, you know, wear some old T-shirt, or I can wear the same clothes I'm wearing at work that day.
I'm wearing my pajamas.
Exactly. You can do it in your pajamas. No one knows. No one really cares. And it's so it's much more convenient and allows me to be a lot more productive.
Absolutely.
So I'm sticking with the audio. I should probably be doing YouTube videos, Moz, but sticking with audio because that works for me.
Can I ask, you very kindly pointed me towards Libsyn.
Yeah.
Which I'm now – so Libsyn is my hosting site.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all very good, and I'm about to sign up with iTunes, which is obviously essential to get your podcast out there into the world.
Yeah.
Anything else that you would recommend that is a good way of pushing your podcast out there? I see that you use Audio Boom, don't you?
No, I used to use Audio Boom, but I recently changed to Libsyn as well. I moved to Libsyn, when was it? I guess at the beginning of May this year.
Yeah,
because of various reasons, and that's working out pretty well for me. I mean, it was complicated because I've got, you know, over 450 episodes, so I had to replace I had to replace all of the embedded players on my website, all of the download links, a hell of a lot of stuff that had to be done as a result of that. Also, another thing I've noticed is that Audio Boom's statistics and Libsyn's statistics are a bit different, and I think it's the way that Libsyn calculate their statistics, and they have various different filters that they apply to the data. So, you know, I think it's quite complicated to work out exactly how many people are downloading your stuff and where they're downloading it. And, you know, when you consider that the internet is basically this huge network with all these different I guess substations where, you know, the internet connection goes through particular substations. A lot of my stats, I look at my stats these days with Libsyn, and a lot of them come from Virginia in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest like geographical locations for audience. And, you know,
I'm thinking Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would kind of understand that, because maybe in Wisconsin they love murder, you know? That might be the case.
The home of Ed Gein, the murderer, so...
Right, well, you know, they maybe in Wisconsin they just have a particular fascination with that kind of thing, you know? But it would surprise me if all these people in Virginia are so interested in either A, learning English, or B, just me as a person. Mm. And, you know, I was scratching my head thinking, what is it? Is it Langley, Virginia? Is it the CIA that are listening? Are they really focusing on me? Am I the guy that they need to be paying attention to? I don't think so. And then, you know, someone wrote to me saying, no, it's because, you know, a lot of servers, a lot of internet servers are based in that part of America. You know, a lot of the internet goes through America. And I think because Libsyn, their servers are somewhere in the United States. And so probably there's some sort of internet substation or routing station in Virginia. And if people are using like VPNs, you know, proxy servers or whatever to access my content, then maybe that counts as coming from Virginia. Or maybe some countries drag their internet from the US. You know, it goes through the US before it goes to some countries, maybe. And so that counts on my statistics as coming from America. So I don't know. To an extent, you know, these days I'm just trying to use an element of skepticism when I read my stats.
Yes.
You know, I can't really know. I don't really know how many people are listening. And I actually know for certain that there are lots of people listening to my podcast who aren't downloading it from my RSS feed. They're actually getting it from some kind of BitTorrenting site, because my podcast has been put up on various different BitTorrent sites by people from various countries. And so, you know, I don't know. No idea how many people are really listening.
I tell you what, a good way to work out how many listeners you actually get, if all of Luke's listeners could send him an email today, that would be great.
Yeah, well, you know, again, I often do that, but I often make these requests for my listeners to get in touch with me, because the vast majority of the people who listen to my podcast are what I call ninjas. They're just sort of hiding in the shadows, listening, just... never actually coming into plain view. So I just, the vast majority of them are just ninjas. And every now and then someone comes out of the woodwork and goes, oh, I've decided to stop being a ninja and I thought I'd get in touch with you. They leave me one message and then gone again forever.
And but they all seem really nice. I've met quite a few of them, and everyone I've met on my tour who listens to your podcast are really lovely.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. That the vast majority of people who listen to this seem to be really nice, sweet people, which is good. Which is also encouraging. You know, it just makes you realize that everyone's just basically, there are lovely people all over the world. Doesn't matter where you come from. You know, and so that's nice.
I love what you do as well. They really love your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to, right? Yeah, that's nice.
Do you find that a weird thing that at any point in the world, someone somewhere is listening to your podcast?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So I do.
yeah, of course. Yeah. I've thought about that idea that there are these people all over the world listening to it. Yeah. Yeah, it's mostly brilliant, that idea. Mostly brilliant, because it just, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know quite what I should think, really, as a result of that. You know, what do you think? What should that change the way I think about my life or anything?
It makes you like Lennon and McCartney. You're like the Beatles of podcasting.
More and more it seems to be happening that, for example, people come to the school where I work.
Yeah.
Like, not long ago, I was interviewing someone for a position in one of our classes at the British Council. Because we do that, you know, people come in, they want to take lessons, so we interview them to find out their language level and to put them in the right place and stuff. And I was talking to one woman, and she was saying, and I was like saying, so, you know, what do you do to improve your English on your own? And she was saying, well, I watch TV shows and DVDs and things, and also I listen to podcasts, and actually I listen to one called, and I was like, yeah, what's it called? She was like, it's called Luke's English Podcast. And I was like, oh yeah, I've heard of it. And and she was like, and actually, are you you know? And I was like, yeah that's me, yeah. And she's like, really, that's you? And I was like, that's me.
Did you pull out a pen and give her an autograph?
No, I didn't, but I don't know. It's, I don't know quite how I should react, because I don't think I should be going, yes, that's me, I am the world famous Luke, let me give you an autograph that you haven't asked for. You know, I don't want to be like that. Generally I'm just like, wow, cool, great, you like the podcast, that I'm really happy to hear that, thanks a lot for listening. And also, just a few months ago, I was teaching the first day of a class, and I was talking to my students, and one thing we do on day one is that we show our students a little PowerPoint presentation, and in that, one of the pages is like some tips that you can do to improve your English outside class, and one of the tips is, you know, listen to podcasts. And I said, do any of you listen to podcasts for learning English? And this one girl from Chile, who happened to be at the British Council in Paris, she was like, yes, I listen to a podcast. And actually, I are you Luke from Luke's English Podcast? And I was like, yes, I am. That's me. And she was like, I listen to your podcast. And she turned to the class and like, It was really sweet. She turned to the class and she said, I have to say, his podcast is really good. And she turned back to me and she said, I just want to thank you so much because your podcast has helped me so much with my English. And her English was good as well. That was the cool thing. You know, she was good. And she, like, in the lessons, she kept coming up with the right answers. She knew all this vocab that the other students didn't know. And I was like, just out of interest, how do you know all this English that all the others don't know? Just curious. And she was like, oh, well, it's obvious, it's because I listen to your podcast, of course. I was like, ah, okay. You know, just looking at everyone else. Ah, interesting that, isn't it, that she knows all the English and you guys don't. And she listened. Coincidence that she also listens to Luke's English podcast. You know.
Gold star. I have to say, having done a couple of podcasts with you, it's actually helped me on doing Murder Mile tours.
Really?
Because I think, like on this episode, we've only explained words like rutting, which I think even to most people who speak English full time, rutting is not a word that you would use on a regular basis. But I found that with my tours, because I get a lot of people from different countries now, I've actually changed my script.
Mm.
I've taken a lot of, like, I used to have the word whittle in my tour.
Which means?
A whittle.
You know what? I'm pretty sure we had this one in the last time we talked about this, but go on, do it again.
Well, a whittle is basically a verb. It's like you get a piece of wood and you slowly etch away little pieces of wood to turn it into something else. And that basically whittling means to take something down to its finer point.
So you've got a stick of wood in your left hand, you've got a knife in your right hand, and you're cutting away at the wood until you get something. Often it's like a sharp point.
Yeah,
that's often what people whittle a stick down to a spike or something. But you can also whittle a stick into another shape. But it means cutting something down, removing bits, cutting it down until it becomes something else. So whittling something down. And you do that with evidence, right, in a crime investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of the information and you remove the stuff that's not relevant. You whittle the evidence down until you're left with the bare bones. Exactly, the bare bones of the case, which often will, you know, tell you who did it and what
actually happened. Or shopping trolley.
Or in this case, a shopping. You're left with a shopping trolley.
But it's really useful speaking to all of your listeners who come on my tour. I actually have a good conversation with them as we go around, and I do say, is there anything you don't understand? And all of them have been great. And whether that is because they listen to your podcast, and as you say, because we go through a lot of different discussions about different aspects of English language spoken by English speakers, I think they understand absolutely everything that happens on the tour.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So it's helped me work out what, you know, those kind of phrases that really only English people use.
Yes.
So
I mean, the English is a global language. There are various types of English, right? There's the global English, which the international community uses, and then there's English that English people use, or, you know, British people use.
Yeah.
And so the mistake that many native English speakers make is that they assume that the English that they use on a daily basis is the universal English that everyone is attempting to use out there in the world. And it's not. English people, I think, if they're talking to non-native speakers, they bear a lot of responsibility to adapt their English, not like speak really slowly or, you know, do what they call foreigner talk, which is like me, go market, what time, you know, not that kind of thing. But English people have got to understand that certain things, like certain idiomatic phrases or certain aspects of our pronunciation, make it really hard. It's a barrier to the global community. And I think that, you know, it would do Brits a lot of good to bear that in mind. I think it would help. The communication is a two-way street, and it can be very, very hard for non-native speakers to understand British people, because British people have got no idea how difficult they are to understand.
You know? I've just come away from dog sitting for my brother.
Dog sitting.
Oh, yeah. So, yes. So, instead of house-sitting, I was looking after two dogs.
Okay, or babysitting. In this case, it was a dog. So, two dogs.
And I went back to my hometown, which is Birmingham, where I was born and raised. So, that's in the middle of the... kind of south of the middle of the United Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
And I've lived in London for about 20 years. So, I'm used to hearing different accents and voices and, you know, ways of speaking. And quite often, I can hear a voice. I can go, okay, they're Albanian, they're Nigerian. I can really work it out. I'm getting quite good now.
Yeah.
Even on my tours, people turn up and I can go, oh, you're from Virginia. You must own a server in Virginia, which is downloading Luke's podcast.
You've clearly been listening to Luke's. Yeah, you're going to all of the people on your tour are going to be from Virginia now.
Yeah, that'll be it. But so I'm very good at learning, finding out where people come from very quickly.
Mm.
I was in Birmingham, my hometown, last week, and I heard someone talking, and I went, I can't recognise that at all. I can't recognise a single word. It's not Eastern European. It's not an African language. I couldn't work it out at all.
What, they were speaking in another language?
In an entire different language, okay. And I could not work it out at all. And I got nearer to them, and I listened really intensely.
And they were Scottish?
No, they were Brummy.
They were Brummy?
They were from where I was born, but their use of Brummy, as we call it, so Brummies are people who come from Birmingham.
Yeah.
Their Brummy was so strong, I could not understand my own language.
Wow. Really? Like, even when you paid close attention, you still couldn't understand it?
It was only when I got nearer I could I could grasp what she was talking about.
Right. Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah. So, I can entirely sympathise with people who come to Britain and they can't understand what we say half the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, English is an incredibly diverse language, and certainly in the UK, the diversity is massive.
Yeah.
So, I think there's responsibility on both sides. Obviously, people who are learning English do have a lot of, you know, work to do. They've got to, you know, learn the language, and they also have to try and get used to hearing the different versions of it. They can't expect everyone to just speak the way that I do.
And do you curb your language, or do you hone the way that you speak for this podcast?
I think I do a bit, but I try not to, you see. I mean, it's a difficult thing to get into. If you start thinking about adapting your language, I mean, if you're recording a podcast which you want to be, you know, listened to by an audience, then of course you're going to adapt your language a bit, right? You're going to adapt your speech patterns a little bit just because you're presenting on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a fairly unnatural situation anyway. I'm sitting on my own in a room. I don't have another person in front of me, and I'm just talking, and I'm trying my best to try and make it engaging and so on. I don't really know anymore, Moz, if I'm adapting my English that much. I think that this is how I normally talk, honestly.
Are you just so used to doing the podcast that this has become very natural?
I don't know. I think that what do you think? Do you think I speak differently to do you think my English is weird in any way or
no.
What?
This sounds like you.
Yeah. Okay. So
this is the version that I know of you.
Right. Well, I think that I first met you when I'd already been teaching for, I'd already been teaching for about 8 years when I met you, been teaching English. And I think that probably my job meant that my English has become a little bit more accent neutral, I would say.
Okay.
My accent, I don't know if there's such a thing as accent neutral. That's the thing, because if you open your mouth and speak, you're using an accent. I mean, my accent has become a bit more like RP, or maybe it's sort of developed where I think people can understand me. But I'm really, one thing I try not to do is do that foreigner talk, which is when they're talking to non-native speakers of English, they start to do this thing that they would not normally do, which is where they start to reduce the amount of connected speech. So connected speech would be something like, you know, what are you thinking about at the moment? What are you thinking about at the moment? You see, all the words are connected. And what I sometimes hear from people talking to non-native speakers is, what are you thinking about at the moment? You know, all the T's are included. And, you know, there's a good reason why people are doing that, because they're trying to make it more comprehensible. But also, if they're not careful, they swing too far in the other direction and it becomes unnatural.
Yes.
And you know, non-native speakers then, as a result, all they are capable of understanding is disconnected speech, you know. So, I don't know. I think it's a balancing act when I'm talking to non-native speakers. It's a balancing act between trying to be understandable and, on the other hand, trying to be natural. And I think it's possible to speak naturally and yet be really clear. And it's not necessarily about the way you pronounce. It's also about the way that you deliver information, you know, and I think you can sort of allow, you can keep it understandable and natural by just trying to be a good communicator.
Absolutely.
You know, someone like Steve Jobs, for example, everyone understands him or understood him, including non-native speakers. They find him easy to understand because he just delivers a pretty complicated message in such a simple way, keeps it short and simple. I mean, I don't know if I keep it short or simple. Sometimes I think I talk too much and I make it all too complicated, but I try, you know. I don't know. What was the question?
I can't remember.
Neither can I.
This turned into Mike's English podcast. I did the interviewing for the last half an hour.
Yeah, you did. I mean, if you like, we can talk more about it. You can ask me some other questions that you have, and we'll do that off the record. But I think it's probably time to call it a day on this one.
Wee-wee.
Thank you so much. Did you just say wee-wee?
Wee-wee, I did.
Okay.
Wee-wee, as in yes, yes.
Wee-wee, as in the French for yes, yes, but also wee-wee is...
We've all been there.
It's urine, ladies and gentlemen. Wee-wee. Yeah, we'd like to do a wee wee. It's what adults say to children. It's like a kid.
You'll be saying that soon.
I know. Yeah, wee wee. But I think in France they call it pee pee.
So do they?
Yeah. So, but I will be saying wee wee, and my child will grow up confused because they will think that urinating is called yes yes. And they'll go back to England and they'll you know, talk to other adults and they'll be like yes yes, and the adult will be like, good, you're positive. No yes yes.
What do the French call poo poo?
Caca. Yeah, which I think is quite common in Latin sort of languages. I think caca is a common word for poo in various languages, but yeah. Which doesn't mean anything in English, right? Caca doesn't. I mean, and
also,
yeah. I mean, cack is an English word that means poo.
I wonder if we've taken that from caca. Probably.
I think we probably have. I think it probably came from Latin, but we do have the word cack. It's quite a good word, isn't it?
I wonder if it's Nordic.
I know. I think it's probably Latin, but it's such a short word. It sounds Germanic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But I mean, you know, the French use it, and I think it's in Spanish. Pretty sure that they also say.
Do the French have as many words for poo that we do? Because the English have as many words for poo and wee as the Eskimos do for snow.
What does that tell you about our culture?
It says a lot, and yet we have one word for snow.
I don't know, to be honest, because my vocab isn't rich enough.
This should really call this Luke's wife's English podcast.
I should. I need to get my wife involved in this. She's never been on the podcast.
Is she not?
No, because I've always decided to just, you know, keep that side of things separate. You know, I have certain barriers. I mean, I often worry and wonder about how much I'm revealing on the podcast. I mean, I don't know if it matters. I mean, I don't know what you think, but I sometimes think, oh, maybe I'm telling people too much about myself, and should I be giving away so much personal information? For example, I did an episode about my wedding, and I told everybody, you know, what happened on my wedding day, and I described the ceremony and stuff, and then I was thinking, why am I doing this? And one of the reasons why, actually, is because so many people ask me to do it. But then I just kind of think, why am I telling everyone about the most personal, private day of my life? That, you know, why am I doing that? I mean, the reason, I guess, that I was doing it because I thought it would make an engaging episode of the podcast, and that the theory is that the more people are personally engaged and motivated by what they listen to, the more they actually engage with the language, and it's not just input at that point, it becomes intake. These are like linguistic terms for input, meaning just the stuff you're listening to, and intake meaning the stuff you're really focusing on, and the stuff that really when you're really focusing on stuff, when you're really interested in hearing every word, then you're far more likely to remember those words and then use them, and it makes language acquisition a lot more powerful when you're fully engaged in what you're listening to. So that being the aim of this, I thought, well, all right, I will tell people about my wedding day, but then I often think, should I be doing that? Should I just give away so much personal information? I don't know. I'm kind of never entirely sure about that. I don't know. What do you think? Am I worrying about it too much?
I think it's nice for listeners, because I love it with podcasts where you learn about the person that who is talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love hearing about their life. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think so.
I listen to about 30 different podcasts.
Do you?
And actually, the more personal they are, the more I get engaged.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's true, isn't it? You know, the more people kind of reveal about themselves, the more interesting it becomes. But I don't want – see, what I don't want to do is to create this expectation that I have to share every aspect of my life with my audience, you know? I think that people respect it. I think they understand that. But at the same time, I often wonder if, you know, are people only satisfied when I'm telling them about myself? I mean, like, I did one where I talked to, sometimes it's for comic purposes, to be honest. And I'm all right with that. Like, we went on a holiday to Thailand last year. And one of the things I described in the podcast about that holiday was when we visited a spa. In Thailand, it was actually a Japanese spa, Japanese style spa in Thailand, and there was an onsen, you know, like a hot spring.
Oh yeah.
And so I thought that my wife and I would have our own private little area where we'd get our massages, and there would be like a hot spring that we could bathe in, and a private area. And this is my thinking as I was walking in towards like going in towards the changing rooms. I was thinking, oh, well, you know, we'll be in our own zone. We walked in and we were separated, you know. My wife was like guided into one area and I was guided into another area, and I was like, well, okay, bye, see you later then. And got undressed and everything, and they give you, like, you're only allowed to take a small towel into the bathing area. The towel is about, well, it's, let's say it's not big enough to wrap around your waist. Certainly my waist.
I feel sick.
I couldn't wrap the towel around my waist, and then I realized, oh, okay, so I'm sharing. Okay, all these other people are going to be there, and everyone's naked, and me too, and I'm the only like foreign guy in the place. And so after I'd come to terms with this, I decided, well, okay, fine, nothing to worry about, stiff upper lip and all that. Hopefully the lip will be the only thing that's stiff.
Hey.
And so I went out and went into the bathing area. And I mean, I've just told this story before, but basically the whole, what it felt like is, you know, when a cowboy walks into a saloon and they're like new in town, and everyone stops talking and looks around, and the music stops, the pianist stops playing, and everyone just looks around. Playing? The pianist, not the nothing out. No, not the, the pianist. Not the nothing else. That's basically what happened. Like, I don't know if I was just being paranoid or if this is genuinely what happened, but I felt like everyone just kind of broke off their conversations. There were people just lounging around, naked guys lounging around chatting. It was like Rome or something, but not Rome. And they appeared to break off their conversations and have a look at me and, you know, check me out, like, in all aspects.
And did they turn to you and say, are you Luke from Luke's English podcast?
Well, nobody actually said that, but I in the back of my mind I was thinking, Yeah, you know, that's the sort of thing I was thinking. And, you know, then I turn to go to one of the bars, and, like, the first guy who walks past me is a midget.
Right.
Like, a midget, naked midget as well. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with being a midget. I mean, obviously that's fine. But it was quite striking to me when I, like, turned and they said, oh, midget, naked midget. And, you know, obviously it did occur to me to check him out and think, is it in proportion or not? That was the first question my wife asked me, by the way, when I told her this story. I was like, oh yeah, everyone was naked, everyone looked at me and it was really embarrassing, and there was a midget and it was naked as well, which was a bit weird. And, like, you know, she was like, uh-huh. And the first thing she said, was his dick a normal size? You know, that was like the first question she had to me. And I was like, whoa, that's the first thing you asked me? So where was I going with this story? Why did I start telling you this?
We were just talking about sharing yourself on the internet.
Right. So I told this story about, you know, being naked and all that. And so I have, you know, let's say shared quite a lot on the podcast. I mean, I think I'm more comfortable about that one because I think it's just a funny story and it's, you know, it's pretty harmless. Telling people about my wedding day, I don't know about that. And that's why I don't feature my wife on the podcast, because I just think, well, she's mine, thanks very much. And there is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily want to open up all the doors of my house and you know, reveal all that stuff. And I think I will probably take the same approach to my baby when that arrives. I don't want to necessarily make it all about my baby. I don't want to reveal that stuff. You know, we've said to each other that my wife and I have said to each other that we don't really want to post lots of pictures of the baby on Facebook and things like that. And I mean, who knows, when she's born, we might fall in love with her so much that we will be posting pictures of her everywhere. I don't know. But at this point, I think that, you know, probably won't be doing that, I think.
Interestingly, two of my friends had babies at the same time. And one of them, she posts pictures every single day. Like, there's easily 5 to 6 pictures of her children every single day posted on all social media platforms.
Wow.
Which I disagree with, because when the child gets to be 18, how are they going to deal with that?
Yeah.
But interestingly, my friend Fiona, when she was pregnant, she said, yeah, I'm not going to be one of these mums who's going to post pictures of their children on the internet. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Mm. Her daughter's now 4 years old, and she's remained true to her word.
Oh, really?
She rarely ever posts pictures. If she does, it will be a picture of her daughter, maybe in the garden, but from behind.
Yeah.
You can't see her face. And actually, as a present to me, like, when my friend Fiona comes onto the boat to visit, mm-hmm. I'll say, okay, do you have one for me? And she'll pull out her phone and she'll show me a video.
Okay.
And it's like special photos and videos only for friends.
Right, I see. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, which I think is a nice way to do it.
I mean, you know, I've got friends who publish a lot of photos of their kids on Facebook, and, you know, I sort of think, well, if that's what they choose to do, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's I'm not going to sort of, like, shame them about it or anything. You know, that's, I respect their choice, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, you know, but I just feel like I would rather not do that.
I think about the child when they get to 18. How are they going to cope with the fact that they're going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of photos of them on the internet that they can't, you know, that people have shared that they can't stop?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, maybe by the time, you know, kids that are being born at the moment, when they're 18, they might be living in a world in which you just can't control it, that everyone and everything is online. You know, that we might have got to that point then. I mean, it seems to be that's the way that things are going. Like, I remember hearing in a presentation by one of my students at school once, like this really clever guy who did this presentation about the effects of social media. And he said this quote, which has stuck with me, and it was something along the lines of, don't do anything in your life that you wouldn't be happy being posted onto YouTube.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's
right,
true.
And it's quite a scary idea because it means that we now are in a situation where anything we do might end up on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, and that you have to now live with that in mind, that even when you think you're just doing something in private, or you're just even just out in public doing something, like you're going to the pub and having too many drinks and sort of, you know, emerging from the pub a little bit drunk, that someone might be filming it, it might end up on YouTube. You can't really control what goes up anymore, which I think it's awful. I hate that idea.
They do say now that if you're applying for a job, that you have to be very careful that your new prospective employer does tend to go through your Facebook account and Twitter to see what you're really like.
Yeah. Well, that's stuff that you've chosen to put up. You see, I mean, that I can, I'm kind of okay with that, because as long as people realize that they should be a bit careful about the things they post of themselves, that I understand. But there might come a point where cameras and like video cameras and stuff are so ubiquitous that, you know, everything we're doing is basically publicly available. I mean, Google, for example, with their Google Maps project, they would like Google Maps to become more and more basically a map of the real world.
Oh, they're getting people to upload their own photos, aren't they?
Right, right, exactly. That eventually we might get to a position where you can enter people's homes using Google Maps, because people have, with the permission settings on Google, people have said, yeah, okay, you can come into my house. And Google Maps will be so sophisticated that someone will just be able to use their camera, just literally wave it around the room. And that will be enough information for Google to create a 3D environment of your house. And then people, I don't know, maybe people wearing VR headsets will be able to come into your room and look around. And it might even be real time. You know, for example, it could be a 360 degree camera that is broadcasting live what's going on in someone's house, and other people in the community, the online community, can enter with their 3D VR equipment on and just be in your house, you know, looking around.
What about if I'm having a poo?
Well, again, it depends. It depends. You know, if you choose to put a 360 degree camera in your toilet, and people can come in and go, oh, I see Mike's having a poo. Good, good one. Nice structure. I like the consistency. You know, I don't know. Some people, I'm sure, would love to do that. They'd like to be part of a community that compares poo.
There is a website called Rate My Poo.
Exactly. It's already there. There's a website, ratemypoo.com. You can check it out, folks, if that's your cup of tea.
It will help your English.
Well, it might do. You know, if you're a person who wants to talk about poo and you lack the relevant vocab, I mean, you've already had cack on this one, but you know, you could go to ratemypoo.com, and I'm sure you'll find all manner of descriptive language for just that specific subject. But I don't know, the thing is that, like, if it's going to be possible for that to happen, then it probably will happen. And yes, I imagine it will be a question of permission, whether people will choose to let it happen. But, you know, all it takes is a flick of a switch. All it takes is for the wrong person to get in control of that technology. And you could end up with huge invasions of privacy.
It could easily happen, because especially with permissions on, I've noticed, like, on Facebook, every time you do an update, you have to check your permissions, because they change the settings.
Exactly, yeah. They can be very clever about it, or they can make it very, very difficult for you to understand the privacy settings. So there are ways for companies. I'm not suggesting that companies are intending to do this, but we don't know what might happen in the future. But a company might be able to legally say, in the eyes of the law, the company will say, well, there are permission settings that allow users to choose what they publish and what they don't publish, and it's all there in the permission settings. But for a user, just the average user, they might not understand the permission settings. It might not be possible for them to find all the stuff in the menus. That the menus might change, and in the end, it might just, on a practical level, it might just be really hard for people to avoid publishing all this stuff. And
well, they might put it in terms and conditions, which they do, which no one reads.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It might just be buried in the terms and conditions. The permission settings will be buried deep within the security settings of whatever the application is that you're using. And also, it in the general culture, it might just become more and more acceptable. And in fact, expected to share all this stuff. And it might, you know, that stuff that's outside the law, just general, the cultural consensus might be, yeah, we share everything. And why aren't you sharing all your stuff? And it might just be this subliminal thing where people are doing it because they feel like they should do it because of peer pressure, which is sort of beyond the control of the law. So, you know, it's I'm trying not to be pessimistic about it, but I think that we shouldn't ignore the potential for this. Or, I don't know. I don't know if it's bad. Because, you know, if going back to murder again, if no one has any privacy anymore, maybe no one will murder each other anymore.
Could be. I mean, the amount of crimes that are being solved fast at the moment.
Mm.
Is amazing because you literally can't get away with it now. There are CCTV cameras everywhere.
Certainly, and also, in England, in London.
Everyone is carrying a smartphone.
Right.
So you notice in a lot of news reports now, it's not the press that gets there or the police. It's someone, literally something happens, someone pulls out their smartphone and it's recorded and uploaded.
Right, exactly. So from that point of view, it's great that people might find it much harder to commit acts of crime that previously, you know, they could have got away with easily. But it also, it's just a question of trust, isn't it? Like, we have to put our trust in the people who are in charge of all this stuff. That also raises questions about artificial intelligence, that as artificial intelligence gets more and more sophisticated, and basically it will be in control of everything. I mean, it already is to an extent because of the algorithms that are used in investment banking and stuff. A lot of the investments in the stock exchange are being done by computer programs. Yeah, it's robots or computer programs or artificial intelligence or algorithms that are doing all the money marketing stuff.
The stock market crashed for 20 seconds about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
The new film was coming out. What's it called? White House Down?
Oh, yeah. I watched that just the other week. I loved it.
Oh, right.
It's hilarious. Well,
they'd done a bit of marketing, and it was White House Down, terrorist attack, da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And because someone at the White House had retweeted it, because they thought, oh, great, you know, the White House.
Mm-hmm.
The bot saw that it came from a reliable source and went, White House under terrorist attack. It entirely collapsed.
Wow.
And then a human spotted it and went, no, delete.
Wow, so wow.
Everything collapsed for about 20 seconds.
So, yeah, I mean, a piece of artificial intelligence that has this responsibility. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, robots, computers are utterly fallible.
Like
us. They make mistakes all the time. I mean, if there was a robot invasion, or if the technology rose up and started to fight against humans, as we see in the movies so many times, all you'd need is like a rainbow umbrella, right? You just spin the rainbow umbrella in the face of the robots and they would just freeze. I don't know. I don't think the logic really works there, but something about...
No, all you need to do is play the sound of, you know, the Pentium sound. When your computer switches off.
What? Choong! That one.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
You just play that really loud and they'll freak out.
Yeah. Or you, as they are advancing towards you, you ask them to check the weather and play your YouTube video at the same time. And that will slow them down. Certainly if it's my computer, it will.
Or you just press update. software update.
Right, yeah.
And they'll be screwed. They'll be like, what? What's going on?
Yeah, they'll be about to, like, you know, kill the, you know, they're about to murder a bunch of people, and then suddenly they'll all shut down, like, software update required.
Yeah.
Just like your PlayStation, when you try and play your PlayStation after you haven't played it for a while, you have to wait for half an hour for all the software to download before you can actually play a game.
Oh, software updates. Ugh.
Oh, terrible, right? And often there's no noticeable difference. Sometimes the new software is worse than the previous software.
When I fell into the canal, as mentioned earlier on, yes, and broke three ribs, I also broke my phone. So yeah. I went into a phone shop and said, "Oh, can I upgrade?" And they went, "Yeah, we'll get you a Samsung A3." And I was like, "Great, okay. Can you transfer the data across, but do not upgrade the software?" I was very specific about that. I said, "Do not upgrade the software because the phone is fine at the moment, but the second you upgrade it, it will turn it into a piece of caca." And after half an hour, I was like, "Have you transferred the files yet?" And the guy went, "No, I'm just waiting for the software update to finish."
Oh, and you were like, "No!"
I did a no really loud, and then I switched on the phone, and it was practically dead.
Oh my goodness! I've got a lot of tech-minded people who listen to this podcast, and I don't know what they're thinking at the moment. So I wonder what in the community what the general position is on software updates. I suppose it's pretty complicated. Probably some of them are good, some of them aren't so good. But I remember back in the day, there was a period where lots of my friends who had Macs and who worked at the Mac, the Apple store, a few mm-hmm. people I knew who worked there, and they would say to me, "Don't upgrade to the next iOS. Just stick with the one you've got, you know, because it's not good." Or if you've got like an old Mac, I mean, I use Mac. And it's probably a similar story with PC. If you have an old Mac and you upgrade to the new software, often that's a bad combination.
Yeah.
So I've
got my laptop here. I've never upgraded it, and it's perfect.
Yeah. But then again, if you want to use the latest, app on your computer, or you want to be able to do this, that, and the other, you want to download a certain bit of software, or you want Flash to work or Java to work on your computer, then it requires a certain operating system. So in the end, you kind of, it's very hard to if you want to just have a Mac that works, you're going to have to upgrade. And I know what a lot of my sort of tech people out there are shouting in their heads now. It's like, get a PC and just modify it yourself. That's what they're all saying. Just get a PC and just modify it, and you don't have to use a Mac, just use like some other operating system and modify the PC yourself. That's the best way. Yeah, but the thing is that I've no idea what I'm doing, so I can't. Yeah. I can't do it. I don't have time. I've got to make lunch and I've got to record a podcast. I don't have time to build my own PC. I'm sorry.
Surely one of your tech ninjas could do it for you.
Surely they could, but
if they really liked your podcast.
Yeah, if they really liked my podcast, they could they could send me a laptop which is specifically tailor-made for me, so that I could use it to really quickly edit and process audio and video.
With a nice camera as well.
With a really top quality HD camera and all that stuff. No, I don't know. No one needs to do that. But if anyone, just happens to have the time and the money, sure, go ahead and send me that computer. If any people working for some kind of technology startup are listening to this and they think, well, maybe if we sent Luke this computer, he might tell the world about our company, I'm open to that idea.
Sorted
indeed. We've been talking for nearly 2 hours now, which is great.
We were wrapping up at minute 57.
Yeah, but honestly, I think that often you don't get into the really interesting stuff until you've been speaking for a while. I'm not saying that the first half of this wasn't interesting. It was, because murder is brilliant. Well, murder is brilliant. Don't quote me on that.
I'm going to put that on my poster.
Obviously, what I mean by that is that murder is a fascinating subject, which is interesting to explore from the point of view of, you know, like understanding psychology and people's actions and all that sort of thing. I don't condone murder, okay? Except for mosquitoes.
Oh, little bastards. Hate them.
Although, you know, obviously they provide a vital function in the delicate balance of the ecosystem. But if one of them comes into my flat, then I will find it, I will hunt it down, and I will kill it.
Do you have a special set of skills?
I do. I have a very particular set of skills. I am the mosquito hunter in my flat.
You know, you're the Neeson of mosquitoes.
I am, that's right. I don't know who you are. Well, I know that you're a mosquito. Beyond that, I don't know. I know you want to suck my blood. But, you know, yeah. That's right. I will find you. I will hunt you down. And I will splat you on the wall of my flat.
They give such a good splat when they've been sucking blood.
They do, like a bloody little splat on the wall. It's really shocking to my wife when I do that. Because she's like, oh! For two things that shock her. One, the brutal death of one of God's creatures. Not that she's a religious person, but anyway, the brutal killing of an animal, I think, is vaguely shocking to her. It's sort of disgusting. You know, she's a bit squeamish about things like insects and spiders, and so you know, having she's from Paris. You know, she didn't grow up in the countryside. Yeah, so she's shocked by the brutality of it, but then also she's shocked about, you just stained my wall with our blood and the DNA of a mosquito. So I then have to very carefully mop up the blood from the wall. Yeah.
Before we go, can I give an interesting piece of information that I learned during my walk?
Uh-huh. Yes, please.
Really, really quick one. It's a skill that I never thought I'd have to learn, but I've learnt it very well.
Mm-hmm.
I can identify different types of drug addicts by smell.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
It's a skill that I never thought I'd have to learn, but anyone who's been on my walks knows that I do give a little warning at the start that we are going into Soho. It can be quite a dangerous place. And it can be. I've been threatened a couple of times. I've had a crack addict try and have a fight with me. So I'm kind of used to it. But at the start of each tour, what I do is I do a little walk around, and I've got to know all of the drug addicts.
Okay.
I've got to identify them quite well, and I know which are the terrifying ones and which are the nice ones. But also I've got to learn how to identify what drugs they're on, but just by their smell.
Okay. Is caca involved in this at all?
Caca, unfortunately not. It could be. It probably will be soon. Uh-huh. Crack addicts have it's a very caustic smell, very chemically.
Mm.
So if you go near them, you have a bit of a whiff. There's no other way to describe it but kind of a very harsh chemical smell.
Right.
Whereas heroin addicts have a very sweet smell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of like a very burnt molasses. Treacle.
Treacle, like burnt sugar or burnt treacle.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Why would you say that is then? Why do crackheads smell of chemicals, harsh chemicals, and heroin addicts smell of burnt sugar?
I think it's the components of it. I think because both of those drugs, you can ignite them, set fire to them, and then smoke and inhale them. And a lot of the addicts tend to because they're often, because they're wet as well, because they've been outside, the smell really clings to them. So you can smell what kind of drugs they're on from a good distance away.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah.
A useful skill, if anyone wants to know.
Okay. And do you find that these different types of drug addicts behave in different ways?
What I've worked out is it's about timing.
Uh-huh.
So I do a tour Sunday mornings, and if they're if they had drugs the night before and they're coming down and they need an up, they can be quite aggressive. But if they've already taken their drugs a while ago and they're still on the high, they can be really pleasant.
So, but really, it works the same for heroin and crack?
I'm not too sure about heroin. I only know crack at the moment.
Okay, so
I'm not too sure because they tend to zonk out.
Yeah, I obviously the drugs work in different ways and they have different effects and things. And like, you know, I don't know if heroin wears off more quickly or less quickly than crack. But you're talking about crack. So you're talking about people who've been taking crack that night. And when you see them in the morning, they might be a bit crank. They might be a bit cranky and bad tempered because they need another hit.
There's a lady who you sometimes see on the tour called I call her the screaming woman.
Uh-huh.
And the screaming woman, oh god, she's terrifying. So one day we were doing, anyone who's been on my tour knows that Murder 5 that we do is Dutch Lair. So it's the murder of a prostitute about 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. And halfway through giving this bit of the tour, I was just about to explain about how the prostitute, she had her head bashed in with a really flat, heavy 2 kilo iron, which splattered her brains up the wall. Before I could even get to that, in the corner of my eye, I could see this 5'4", quite slim, quite pale Jamaican lady walking towards me with a suitcase. And that's what I do, is I do the tour, but in my peripheral vision, I'm watching out for danger all the time.
Yeah.
And I saw her coming up and she interrupted. She said, does anyone have any money? I need money for food. And I said, I don't. Sorry. Do you know the British thing that we apologize for everything? I couldn't say no. I said, no, I'm sorry.
And sorry meant, can you go away now, please?
Yeah, pretty much. But she, to her, in her mind, sorry is the worst word in the world. I don't know why. And she lost her anger. She literally went, you're sorry! And erupted in the middle of the street.
Wow.
While I'd got 15 people on the tour. Oh, God, she was terrifying. But yeah, no, she's on crack. And I could smell it as she was coming down the street.
Oh, my God. So was she so angry because she had recently had crack or because she hadn't had crack?
I think she was coming off. So I think she'd had it the night before, but she was desperate for more.
So, yeah. So it's, I guess, like an equivalent would be when someone has not, they've woken up and they haven't had their morning coffee. In other words, people can be a little bit bad tempered before they have their coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that times 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see me on a walking tour.
Yeah, you see you.
Yeah.
Talking about people's heads getting bashed in with irons.
Oh, yes.
And she's like, never mind that. Just give me some money.
Give me my crack.
Wow. Maybe, yeah.
Well, it's a skill that I never thought I'd have to learn, but I have learned it.
Very interesting. Moz, thank you so much for talking to us on the podcast.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Mr. Luke.
I've really enjoyed listening to you talking about Murder Mile Tours and about Murder Mile. Is it called Murder Mile True Crime Podcast?
Murder Mile, yes. Launching 1st of October.
1st of October. Okay, I will be putting the links on the page for this episode. I think this is probably going to be two episodes because after talking about the murder stuff, we did veer off on various tangents, which is great. I think that's good.
There was a nice mix in the second half.
Yeah, we did have a bit of mix of different stuff. So there'll be two episodes, I think. There'll be the Murder Mile episode, and then there'll be the rambling tangents, waffling. But I hope to see you soon, in the flesh, as it were.
Lovely.
That is an expression, ladies and gentlemen listening. If you say,
I'm hung like a midget.
He's hung like a midget, so not that kind of flesh. But I mean, there is an expression in English that means in the flesh. It means when you see someone in person, you actually see them properly, rather than on a Skype call or something like that. So,
or in a sauna, naked, not, with a midget walking past with his wang out.
Not that kind of flesh. Well, not as much as that, let's say. All right, well, have a nice day on the boat. Are you going to stick around where you are, or are you going to move somewhere else?
I'm literally about to move the boat. So, yeah, in about 10 minutes, I'm going to be for about 3 hours, I'll be moseying along on the boat trying to find somewhere else to live. So,
okay. Well, I hope you find somewhere nice and that you don't get disturbed by rutting deer or foxes having sex with each other. It's very very inconsiderate of them to be rutting like that just next to your boat.
Or even crack addicts. Addicts rutting with a deer.
Yeah, couldn't they just get a room?
Get a room.
All right. Nice one. Speak to you again soon. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Luke. Thank you to Luke's podcast listeners as well.
Nice one. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye. All right, then, there you go. That was the rest of my chat with Moz. And don't forget that Moz's podcast, which is called Murder Mile True Crime Podcast, that will be available on iTunes and on murdermiletours.com from the 1st of October. So if you want to hear about more gruesome and grisly crimes from London's history, check out Moz's podcast and you'll get all of that kind of thing there every week. I think it's going to be every week. All right, then. Good. That's it then, isn't it? That's basically it for this episode. So, what should we do now? I don't know. What do you want to do? Do you fancy a pint? Yeah. Should we go for a pint? Yeah, I know a nice pub just down the road. We can go and have a... Oh, you don't drink? Oh, okay. That's fine. I think they serve soft drinks. That's fine. You can have an orange juice. Do you fancy that? Yeah, or tea or coffee, I'm sure. Anyway, just doesn't matter. Just come to the pub with us. Everyone's coming to the pub now. That's right. All the listeners of the podcast, we're all getting together. We're all going to go to the pub. We're all going to have a drink. It could be a pint of Guinness or just a glass of water. Good luck buying water. You could go out to the bar and just say, hello, I'd just like a glass of tap water, please. They'll probably serve you because, you know, there will be loads of people in the pub buying drinks, so you'll probably get away with buying tap water. Anyway, never mind all that stuff. Come on, we're going to the pub now, all right? We'll be in there we'll be in there for about 19 hours if all goes according to plan. And then that'll be nice. All right then, good. So I'll see you in the pub. Okay, see you in the pub then. All right, bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.